These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are on Tuesday afternoon. Welcome to the Biz Lunch. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Dennis Rodkin will be along a little bit later to talk real estate. He writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. And, you know, I love talking to Dennis because he's got stories about great Chicago homes. And there's a house up for sale now in Lake Forest that was owned by, I think, built for the woman who gave the money that created Hull House. She owned Hull House in Chicago. So we'll talk to Dennis about that and more. Also, shopping is real big for stores, right, for retail in this holiday season. What can it mean for a town? We'll talk to officials from LaGrange and how they're hoping to bring everyone to downtown LaGrange on this Small Business Saturday. But we start on Tuesdays with John Najarian from CNBC and the Najarian Family Office. He's watching Wall Street today. And, John, there is a lot to watch. The Dow down now, what, the last I saw was about 450 points. Welcome back, John.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Yep. Great to be with you, sir.
And so we've erased the gains for 2018 when it comes to the Dow. Larry Kudlow was talking earlier today saying, you know, the economy, the numbers are good. The corrections come and go. This is nothing to be worried about. Is he right?
Yes. I had to sort of pause for a second there. He is right. Just like if I have had a long enough timeline, there are lots of stocks that I would be willing to catch the falling knife, as we say. In other words, when things are going down, they liken it to trying to catch a falling knife. You can catch it, but you're going to hurt yourself.
Right, right.
And the same is true frequently in the market. Question is, which of these stocks have fallen too far? NVIDIA might be one of those. I bought that today. Apple, I bought that today. But it doesn't mean that they couldn't go lower. I realize that I am catching a falling knife. I'm just hoping that if there is pain, it's not too much.
Well, you don't want you to get hurt, John. I know I don't want you hurt. Well, give me the macro picture here. What exactly is going on with the market? What's behind these drops recently and specifically the last couple of days?
Big risk-off trades coming. Nervousness over what could go on at the G20 meeting. There was optimism that something could be struck, maybe not, you know, agreed to in completion of some sort of a trade deal with China, but a step towards that goal. And then Mike Pence over the weekend was talking pretty tough on trade, and that put us on the wrong foot yesterday, Monday, and we continue that today, although I do see signs that, at least in my mind, looking at the market with more than that 1 week or 10-day time frame, I think there are a lot of values and a lot of deals that have been created by the wholesale selling.
Well, we're headed into the big shopping season, big season for retail, and the projections have been pretty good, more so online than for bricks and mortar. But Target came in today with weaker than expected earnings. At last I saw, they were down 10%, and that's bringing down the entire retail sector?
It's certainly hurting a lot of that sector. Target had been in the midst of a great run into September, where, you know, the stock began the year at, say, $68 a share and ran up to about $83 or so at the end of August, beginning of September. But it's bled off. I'm sorry, I was giving you Best Buy. I apologize, because that's what I had up on my screen. But that is the story with Best Buy, and now Best Buy is back down, you know, basically at the lows of the year, despite putting on that nice performance. Target, the stock that you asked me about, and unfortunately I had the wrong stock on my screen, had an even bigger run. They started the year at 68 and ran to like 90, and now they've bled all the way off, mainly on this selling just of the last couple days, taking them down into the basically high 60s, low 70s. I think there's a lot to be said about why they are where they are and the impact of tariffs and increasing wages, but I think this one is one that you want to watch and or buy here.
Because the drop is temporary for Target.
I think so. Right. The redo of their stores has been tremendous. They've been drawing more customers in because of it. They're spending their money prudently, not just going out and buying back shares, but spending it on CapEx, you know, the things that cause businesses to grow. And that's one of the things. They've redone those stores, and I think that's why down here at $69 a share, just only maybe $5, $6 off the low of the year, I think Target's a very attractive stock.
I don't know if you guys talked about this on the halftime report just concluded on CNBC, but there was this CNBC CFO survey, and it looks like they're saying that they think the Dow could drop another 2,000 points before all of the selling is done. What do you make of that number?
I was out last night with a number of Wall Street types, and they had offered even more dire outlooks than that.
Was that early in the night or late at night?
That was early in the night.
Okay, good.
But I generally am a guy who, like Warren Buffett, I like to buy when there's blood in the streets. And I think days like yesterday and the beginning today, when we were down 560 points, create exactly those kind of oversold conditions. Well, Amazon is $120 off the low of the day already, right now, at mid-session. So I think there's a lot of signs, Stephen, that some of these stocks have been getting oversold, and those are the ones I'm trying to buy.
All right, what are you watching today? You've mentioned a couple. Give us another one.
I was buying Applied Materials today. They are a semi-equipment company. I liked that one a lot. And as I say, Best Buy, I think, has turned a corner as well. And BBY, we were also buying.
Okay, you've got us catching a dropping knife and blood on the street. So some gruesome something to look forward to next Tuesday, John.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
I look forward to it as well.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
You have a great Thanksgiving, too, and all the listeners.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, I think it was maybe 2010, American Express came up with this idea of Small Business Saturday. There was Black Friday. I don't know if Cyber Monday was in effect. Probably was. And then Small Business Saturday. Well, that's coming up this Saturday. And, of course, it's not just small businesses that are hoping to capitalize. In some ways, it's small towns as well. On a phone line now is Nancy Cummings, the executive director of the LaGrange Business Association. Nancy, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. It's an honor to be on your show.
It's nice to talk to you. Now, how about this notion that it's not just about, I mean, small businesses. I'm going to call LaGrange a small town. I don't know if that's the right term, but, you know, this sort of this weekend in many ways is make or break for a town, too.
It is, you know, because so much of small business revenue contributes to the local tax base. So it really does have a large ramification for not just the individual businesses, but for, you know, larger communities as well.
Now, we've talked to, I talked to you guys a few times at LaGrange and the different efforts you've made. That's one of the suburbs with a nice downtown area. So I would imagine it's a destination anyway. But how do you get people to go to the Main Street in LaGrange? Is it Main Street? Rather than the malls on Saturday.
Right, exactly. The malls is who we are competing against, as well as online shopping, because, of course, that's changed the way people buy things now. And so as a community and as a cluster of businesses now, we've made a concerted effort to come together and collaborate on ideas and activities that draw interest to the community and draw interest to LaGrange specifically, so that it does become a destination for not just shopping, but for dining and for socializing and even for buying homes.
I'm interested in this idea of a flash sale that you guys are going to have on Saturday with participating businesses. Explain that for me a little bit.
We are really excited about that, and it's something that's sort of taken off. We started a campaign with Small Business Saturday about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, and while we didn't do a flash sale, we did a campaign to encourage businesses to have special offers on that day. And at that time, we had eight businesses that said they wanted to be a part of it. And now, fast forward, we've got almost 30 businesses that are coming on board, and we're emphasizing the fact that you can come to LaGrange and go into businesses and really get extraordinary deals for just that five-hour period of time. So we're doing a lot to not only drive interest, but to stimulate a sense of urgency that this is the time to do it and that you need to be in LaGrange and be a part of it, make it a part of your kickoff to holiday shopping.
Well, you're also driving them to the LaGrange app, which I think is particularly clever, right? The sales will be sort of broadcast or advertised on this LaGrange shopping app. And, you know, that's nice. That's nice data. That's a nice point of contact for you to have with these customers.
Exactly. We're really excited about that as well. And it is a free mobile app that's available for download through Google or Apple. And it lists a lot of information about what's happening in LaGrange. It might be everything between what's happening at the park districts to what individual merchants are doing. But one of the tabs, one of the icons on this mobile app is the LaGrange flash sale. So you can download it for free and then just take a look and see what these special offers are for this very exclusive period of time.
And you also have a rewards program, right? I mean, if I show up at the LaGrange business office with a bunch of receipts, I get a gift card? Or how does that work?
We do have a holiday shoppers rewards program that kicks off on Small Business Saturday and really goes through the end of the year. And in that, if you're a qualified shopper and you're one of the first 100 people to show us that you've spent at least $300 between Small Business Saturday and the end of the year at a LaGrange business, we will reward you in $50 in gift certificates. And so people can go online starting on Small Business Saturday and download their receipts there or drop it here at the mailbox at our office. And again, if you're one of the first 100 and all of your receipts qualify, you are rewarded for shopping in LaGrange.
Nancy Cummings is the executive director of the LaGrange Business Association. Okay, so Nancy, how are you doing? I mean, are you finding that programs like this are keeping people in LaGrange, or are you just trying to sort of stem the bleeding?
We're not stemming the bleeding at all. In fact, I think we're taking a leadership role and kind of launching a lot of things that other communities are following suit, the flash sale being one of them, and really doing a lot of campaigns that make our businesses and shopping an experience. That's really what everyone is telling us. That's what you're reading is millennials are looking for reasons to come in and buy. They're looking for something that's sort of the antithesis of shopping online. They want that high-quality, intimate experience with the store owner. So, for example, one of our relatively new little shops is called Whisper Me Home. They do a great job of organizing a lot of do-it-yourself workshops in store where they're bringing in a small cluster of people after hours to come in and learn how to do something, whether it's a tablescape or whether it's decorating their front door for the holiday season. And then they have an opportunity to shop privately afterwards. So it's that type of an experience that people are coming in, they're learning something, they're testing the merchandise, they're seeing what they have to offer, and it really develops a bond between that small store owner and the local customer. Right. So it's that type of thing that we encourage.
That's the picture in LaGrange, I'm sure. Similar pictures all over small towns and small businesses this coming weekend. Great success. I hope you have a very a profitable holiday season.
Steve, thank you so much. So do we.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, it's at 12:37. Now on a phone line is Dennis Rodkin, who writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business and who jumped on a phone to join us today. Dennis, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm great, Steve. How are you?
Great. Listen, I want to start by talking to you. I've been following this story. You know, Andrew Herman, who's a great friend of the show, used to be on every week. He works now for Friends of the Chicago River, and they have been vocal in this story you wrote about this golf course piece of property up. I think it's the Evanston-Wilmette border where they want to put a road in. It's pretty complicated, but fascinating anyway. And it got the go-ahead in a way today, but earlier this week or last week, I should say. But explain to me exactly what the sitch is there.
Okay, well, the basic situation is a family has owned an isolated single air 1.1 acre that doesn't touch any roads and is next door to the Canal Shores golf course. Canal Shores is on the shores of the McCormick Channel. So to get the easement that they've just gotten,
so
they had
Dennis,
to go through
just,
the...
is it vacant property now?
Yeah, it's been vacant for at least 30 years. And it used to hold an orphanage and some abandoned railroad land.
Okay.
And so it hasn't, there has been no road touching it since at least 1988 when this family bought it, and I don't know the situation prior to that. But so they're trying to get the family that owns it, whose father bought it, trying to get a road built across a small piece, about nearly a half acre of Canal Shores Golf Course, to touch their property so that homes can be built on it. They want to sell it to developers who could build about four 3,500 square foot homes on it. Last week, they got the easement that is required from the MWRD, the Water Reclamation District. Many people, you mentioned Andrew Herman and others, have talked about sort of the environmental and political side of this. I looked at the real estate side because that's what I do.
Yeah, and it keeps you out of trouble.
And it keeps me out of trouble, yeah, because people have some very hot concerns about the political and environmental side. I just looked at the real estate. So the owners of this lot say that it's probably worth more than $1 million, less than $2 million, if it has a road and they can sell it to builders. But here's what I found. If you build this road, the easement that was just granted runs behind seven houses in Wilmette. These right. houses are on Golf Terrace, and the backs of them now look out at golf course, and have since the golf course was built in 1918. The houses aren't as old as the golf course, but they have the whole time. So if you build a road directly behind them, rather than looking out at golf course, they look out at street and then golf course. Now, arguably not a very trafficked street, because you'd only be building four houses on that property. So the traffic that four houses generate.
And so it'd be but you did look at it and said they thought it would be what? 30%? Or what was the number? It would really hurt their property value if the
street were
going. Yeah,
it would pull down property values. The estimate is really only on one house, but I used it. I applied it to the whole block, so I wasn't very scientific. They feel that this one house would drop in value by 30%. If you look at the whole block, there's about $4 million of property value. So what you're doing is you're losing, perhaps, $1.2 million in property value. So to me, the question is, do these seven homeowners give up a combined $1.2 million in property value in order to create about $1 million in value for this other owner?
Well, there's another way. I mean, and even the owner of the property in question says he doesn't like that idea of going across the back of these houses. But there's another way along the tracks or something to that effect. But the village says that the road that would be built there is too narrow for fire trucks, so they can't do it?
Yes. That's they've been arguing that one for years. So this road that has been allowed comes from the north. If you came from the south, you'd come up some CTA easement, and there are some woods owned publicly, a very small piece of woods, and you'd be cutting into that. And so the question is, that would take up less square footage of existing green space, and it would go, again, next to these CTA tracks. But what I'm told by the owner of the property is that you can't build a wide enough road for fire vehicles to get in and out, for emergency vehicles to get in and out if you do it that way.
Well, it's a fascinating story. Now, we'll watch, because it's certainly not over. I think it's kind of interesting that even the guy who sort of won in this case doesn't think that he totally won, because he's not altogether pleased with the solution, and he doesn't want to necessarily hurt the property values of those homes as well. Okay, so a lot of politicians, after they win election, you know, I covered politics for a long time, and I was out there. After they won, they'd go out to maybe the 95th Street L station, or maybe they'd be at Daley Plaza. They'd be shaking the hands of voters. I think J.B. Pritzker did that as well. But then he also celebrated by buying a horse farm in Florida?
Within a few days of getting elected, he and his wife spent $12 million on a horse farm that is right next to the major Palm Beach horse arena. She's been, J.B.'s wife, M.K. Pritzker, has been a rider her whole life. They've got a horse farm in Wisconsin where they run this big event that is a fundraiser, well, where they ride, but where they also run this big annual event, big fundraiser for Northwestern, that sort of thing. And I don't know whether they previously owned horse property in Florida,
right.
But they do now own this $12 million, 6-acre parcel right next door to the Palm Beach Equestrian Center. Which, again, yeah, they bought just a few days. They closed on the deal just within a few days of his election.
And, of course, what it has in common with other properties is that it's uninhabitable.
Is that
That's a cheap shot. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Not a people.
I'm sorry, Governor-elect. There's just a, it's just an apartment for one guy there, so it truly is a farm. Okay, I want to make
it's a horse farm.
I want to make sure you have time to talk about this this house in Lake Forest that is for sale, because you know I love the story of old houses, and in a way, the history of Hull House goes through this house in Lake Forest. Explain that for me.
You know, it's fascinating. This is a woman, Helen Culver, who was the cousin of Charles Hull and inherited his entire business. His wife and children had preceded him in death. This is the 1880s. Helen Culver is working for him and is his cousin. It's hard to tell from the historical records whether she was, as sometimes described, his housekeeper or, as other times described, his business partner. But after his death, she takes over his business.
And those are the two descriptions. I think there's probably a third one that fits, too. But anyway.
Well, you are terrible. You are terrible. So it's not really clear, but she takes over his entire estate, and she becomes a pretty significant real estate investor in the Chicago area in the latter decades of the 19th century. First, she gives first rent free and then gives entirely Hull, Charles Hull's house to Jane Addams and Ellen Gates Starr, who create what we know as Hull House, the settlement house that, you know, really sort of created or built the movement for settlement houses that helped immigrants learn American culture and habits and that sort of thing. So without Helen Culver's philanthropy, there's no Hull House.
I love
there's
that story.
Another thing. Yeah. Yeah. She also, she gives over $1 million. In the 1890s, she gives over $1 million. So it's a far larger gift today to the University of Chicago, which is trying to become the great institution it later will become, doesn't yet have life sciences labs, and she gives the money that becomes the Hull Laboratories in life sciences. So she's quite a philanthropist. Then in Lake Forest, builds this 47-acre estate. Now the house that she built is on only 6 acres, but she builds this really beautiful house and dies in 1925, and then the people who bought the house in 1977 are selling it now for the first time since.
I love stories like that, the home in Lake Forest. Dennis, we got to fly. Thanks very much for joining us. Have a happy Thanksgiving, friend.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Hey, hold on. Stop right there. Do you smell that? You know you're in Chicago when you catch that eastern wind picking up waves of cocoa from the Blommer Chocolate Company. The family chocolate makers announced that the Japanese-based Fuji Oil Holding will be purchasing the family company for $750 million. The family said they're excited for the next chapter of the history, and so far there's been no announcement of any changes to the factory over on Kinzie. So you can keep picking up those glorious smells on your way to work. And you've heard of Geobit before, right? It's a Chicago startup that's making its way in the world after securing another $6.5 million worth of funding from a number of Midwest and Silicon Valley backers. But if you've never heard of them, it's a wireless tracking device that helps prevent kids from getting lost by basically tracking your child with a very small device. And here you might be saying, well, I don't have a kid. I don't need any of this. They have them for pets, too. No more losing Fido as he runs off to chase those squirrels. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
On the phone line now, Kelly Leonard. He is the host of the podcast Getting to Yes and joins us from time to time, usually on every other Tuesday. I will say that it's been a little more sporadic in recent weeks because Kelly's been going through a serious situation at home. And we bring it up only because it was the subject of a column from Heidi Stevens today in the Chicago Tribune. Kelly Leonard, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Good to be here.
So the quote from you is, so Nora has cancer.
Yeah. So the end of the summer, my 16-year-old daughter, Eleanor, who we call Nora, was feeling all these pains, and we couldn't figure it out. They thought it was a pulled muscle, and it just got so bad. I took her to the emergency room, and we ended up at Lurie Hospital, and she got that diagnosed with cancer in her liver and lungs. So essentially, that's something that's taken over our lives since the end of August.
Yeah, and, you know, the story's about a number of things. I recommend people read it. We're not going to go through it all here, but one of the things you've done is had different, you know, celebrities from around the world hold up signs saying from Team Norma, Team Nora, and that's really helped her and boost her spirits. I've loved watching those pictures come in.
It was totally organic, too. It's just a couple of people started doing it, and then other people jumped on.
Yeah, and, you know, so it's in the public, it's in the paper, so it's public, but
yeah.
I want to stay out of your face with it. But there's a quote in the article that I really want to ask you about. You say, I kind of think when something like this happens to you, you no longer become the person you were, but you become the person you are. I'd love to hear what you mean by that.
So I think, and this connects to a lot of stuff we talk on the podcast, because we're very sort of rooted in the behavioral science community, which is sort of like, why do we behave the way we do in these situations? And I think when you're really tested with something like this, obviously everything changes in your world. But what emerges is sort of some of your best traits and your worst traits writ large. So for me, you know, like, I'm terrified of medical procedures and all that stuff. And so when we're at home and my wife Ann and I have to do that stuff, it's like she's always first to deal with it. But then I'm really good in a room, like in a strange room. Like, I'm good at meeting people and forming quick bonds. And what we've discovered in the behavioral science world is that that's really important to get everyone on the same page to work effectively with each other. So really what Anne, who's also involved in the same work I am and that I've done, is apply all our knowledge and our best skills to get Nora the best care she can get, which means we also have to be the best versions of ourselves that we can be.
The podcast this week has to do with the Medical Professionalism Project. Kelly, we're late. We got about 30 seconds or so. I'm sorry we can't delve into it more.
It's okay.
But just tell me about it.
So Dan Ariely is this very famous behavioral scientist who, when he was a teenager, got burned over 70% of his body. He took that experience with then his study in behavioral science and really gets into this roots with his project of why doctors and nurses and other people behave unethically sometimes and ethically other times.
And
so it's really interesting.
We're all dishonest to a point, but it doesn't necessarily reflect on our goodness or badness.
No, we're not good or bad. We have human nature. And so what they really do is teach us the best ways we can stay good and what are the ways in which we're tempted to be bad.
Kelly Leonard, the name of the podcast is Getting to Yes And. You can find it at WGNRadio.com. Thanks for joining us today. Listen, have a very happy Thanksgiving, friend.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.